Every single day, people take unwanted or unused items to thrift and antique stores across the country. But as the saying goes, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and we're here to prove it. Identify valuable things before you throw them away. Join us as we show and tell of treasures found and sold by a full-time reseller with the hopes of helping you find some treasures of your own. Welcome to the What's Sold podcast.
Welcome back to the What's Sold podcast. Once again, my name is Brandon. I'm here with my good friend Matt, who is rocking the sweet Reebok warm-up.
About to get out on the track. About time to take a little run here.
How old is that? That looks so 1980s.
Well, it's from the 90s, early 90s. But the reason I'm wearing it is that this is something that has just sold.
Oh, nice.
Yes. What you're looking at here, for those who are watching the channel or come to the Facebook page to see it, is a bright green sort of windbreaker jacket with a black and yellow stripe. It says Reebok on it with the symbol. Mm-hmm. And this is straight out of a music video from the early 90s.
Looks like something a South African Olympian would wear for the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So this was cool. This was a $4 purchase at a thrift store. It had been there a while. It was marked down. Sold it for $28.
Nice.
With, I think, $8 shipping. And shipping will probably be less than that, actually. So it was a nice little thing. It sat here for a while. Because I paid $4, I wasn't in a hurry to sell it. I knew somebody would want it eventually. Because these throwback articles of clothing and things from the 90s specifically are pretty in demand right now.
Yeah.
At thrift stores and places.
It's pretty cool, yeah. Too. I would wear that. I couldn't wear that because I'm a larger fella, but I would wear that if I could wear that because it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. That's why I say get out there and get those fanny packs, people. These bright colored fanny packs.
I'm telling you, when you talk
about that. Imagine me with a fanny pack on my hip.
It wouldn't be on your head, Matt. It goes over the shoulder. I keep telling you that.
Well, you know what? No one can. Don't tell me what to do. I'll wear it on my hip if I want. We're right in the middle, right here.
Absolutely, right in the front.
Right in the center.
Right in the front there. All right. Well, we have gone so long on every show. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about that you sold this week? Otherwise, we can launch right into it.
No, this is the main one. I just wanted to say clothing. There are people who have entire businesses around vintage and even our newer clothing or name brand clothing. It's a really big market. There's been a trend in the last few years of, I would say, some of these younger generations, teenagers even, but in their 20s and 30s, who are looking more and more to trying to buy brand name or nicer items used. Not going out to getting new stuff at department stores, but buying them on online platforms. And so if you can get your hands on some decent quality, not with huge tears or stains or things, but decent condition clothing, you could do very well.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's funny. I love vintage clothes and I was talking to a good friend of mine who works for Nike in apparel and I was saying the most irritating thing is when you find that thing that you like. Nike is notorious for not keeping, they just come up with new things all the time. So I've learned that when I find something I like, I immediately go out and buy like three of them because I know that
they got you.
Yes, they totally
got you. That is exactly what they want you to do.
Yes, exactly what they want me to do. And but I will say, especially when it comes to shoes, when you find a good pair of shoes that fit well, can't repeat. So I would be the first guy to go out there and look and find if I knew the exact apparel company that made what I wanted, I would go out and buy it, even if it was a little bit used, because I love wearing them. I love the quality or whatever. I love it.
Yeah, I do. I've done the same thing. I have a particular brand of shoe where I don't have to have the same. They make a different model every year, but it's roughly the same. And it's like, until something changes, this is going to be basically the only type of shoe I wear. I hear you on that. Okay, so today we're going to talk about one topic. And then we're going to play a quick game.
Oh, fun.
Maybe in the middle of
nice.
It.
Nice.
So the topic we're going to talk about today is returns.
Oh.
There's this whole world around buying and selling things, but almost any platform that you utilize to sell on is going to involve some procedures and policies around exchanges or returns. Mm-hmm. And that's for both buyers and sellers. So if you're a buyer, you get something, you don't like it, it's a completely different item than was pictured. You feel like it was not accurately represented, it's damaged, whether it was damaged in transit or was damaged and the seller didn't know or tried to conceal it, doesn't matter. there's going to be some sort of setup for return. And I'm going to talk, I'll talk both about buyer and seller. Let me talk about buyer. How about we do this? I'll talk about the buyer's experience first. We'll play the game, then we'll talk about the seller's experience, because I am both a buyer and a seller.
Right.
I mean, I do this work to make money as a seller primarily, but I also source with the intention of selling later. And so I work both ends of the game, kind of. So as a buyer, and I sell almost exclusively on eBay. I also sell on Etsy. I sell in local and a local antique store and Facebook Marketplace. Those are different. Those are all sales are final kind of situation, mm-hmm. which you found out apparently recently
yes.
when you bought something on Facebook
yes.
Marketplace.
Terrible experience, but yes.
When you're a buyer, eBay has, I would say, about the best protections for you as a buyer of any platform and as a buyer specifically. For almost any reason you can imagine, if you buy something and you want to return it, eBay is going to allow you to return it. They're going to force the seller to accept the return. And I don't care what their policies say. I don't care how equal it seems like the footing is of seller and buyer. There is no comparison. The buyer has way more power when it comes to after a transaction has occurred. What happens next? Well, anything that happens next, almost all the time, the buyer is going to have the advantage. Your guess is as good as mine, and I'm sure they have valid reasons for doing that, but that has been my experience. If you don't like something, you can within usually, well, it depends on what the return policy is for a particular store, but I've heard countless stories about a store that says no returns on the sale, or even they only have a week return policy, and then a month and a half later, the buyer's like, I want to send this back, and eBay's like, okay. You know, so
really?
Yeah.
I thought it was a 30-day policy.
Oh, there's different avenues. You can contact your bank or the credit card company that issued the payment initially, and you can work it from that angle. If you want to contact PayPal, which is owned by, I think, eBay.
Yeah.
They're kind of the same. You can sell it. So you can buy pretty confidently on that platform. And they want you to believe that because they want you to come back. They don't want you to have one bad buying experience. Now, I've heard tons and tons of bad seller experiences where a seller said, you know what, I'm never using this platform again. I've heard almost no horror stories from buyers.
Mm-hmm.
The worst is, I got this thing, I didn't like it, it was broken, whatever, I sent it back. I got my money.
Right.
So that's the thing with eBay. You can send things back. I have a 30-day, almost no questions asked return policy because of the volume, the size of my store, the number of people that follow my store. I want people to be confident when they look at it like, well, I'm not sure, but oh, look, within a month, I can send this back. You know what? I will go ahead and buy it and take my chances. So the buyer can buy it. If you don't like it, you go in, you say, I want to initiate a return. They have a Dropbox that says 6 or 8 different reasons for why you're wanting to return it. And then from my store, I don't even have to respond to that. It automatically accepts it as a return. And then they can have this time period, it can vary, but a time period, 2 weeks to 3 weeks, something like that, to return it back to me. And then I don't have to issue the payment back to them or the money back to them for a few days. I try to do it as quickly as possible when I get it and I inspect it and I make sure it's the same thing. Yeah, as a buyer, you can return things. And everyone has, there's Mercari and there's all these different online platforms that are popping up now trying to compete mm-hmm. with the big dogs, the eBays and the Etsys of the world. I hear mixed reviews as to how well they like those, but they all have different things. So if you're a buyer, I would go in before you buy something in a platform, look and see what their return policies are.
Yeah.
See what the interaction between payments and getting the money. Like Mercari, for example, unless they've changed it as a seller, if you sell something, the money is paid by the buyer, but the Mercari platform does not issue you as the seller that money until the item has already been shipped, already arrived to the buyer. They've looked at it and said, yep, I got it. Or the tracking shows that it's arrived. Then they issue the money. So you're waiting for your money for a while. I don't personally like the idea of not having money, not having something in my hands mm-hmm. at all times, either my own item or the money. This is why I don't use that platform. But eBay is not that way. You have any questions on that or thoughts?
Well, I was just sitting there thinking about like when I buy on one of the reasons I buy on Amazon, there's a part of me that's like, ah, this multinational that treats its workers poorly. But I will say that probably one of the most important things for me personally is their return policy. If I'm going to buy something, like, so if I go down to Belk, which is a big, I don't even know where it is, but it's a big, just like
department
clothing
store.
Department store here Mm-hmm. And if I buy something there, I could take it back as long as it's not, I haven't ripped it up or whatever, some clothing back within, I don't know, 30 days or whatever. And it's just kind of the deal. You just go in there. No, they're never going to say no to you. And that's basically the same policy that Amazon runs, except for when you have secondary sellers. So people that are on Amazon Marketplace that are selling and they're like, you got to tell us why. I'm like, I bought this from Amazon. I didn't buy this from you. So that's just, I don't know if that's the same at eBay, but that was the thought that was running through my head.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it varies. But I mean, as the buyer, I think the takeaway here is that you can usually shop with confidence. You want to look at the whole listing. You want to read everything about it. You want to read their, read their return policies. But there are lots of circumstances where even outside of their return boundaries, eBay will still sort of allow and or force the seller to accept your return. Mm-hmm. So inspect it. There's a different process if something is damaged in transit, because it may require some working with whatever the carrier was, UPS, FedEx, mm-hmm. U.S. Postal Service, to sort of work, provide photos and things so that the money can be returned or a portion of the money can be returned to the seller. But, okay, so that's the buying piece.
Well, wait a second. I'm sorry. Before you go on from that, because you just struck me something. What happens if something's lost? And are you going to talk about that? The idea of, like, so you say you ship something on United States Postal Service or UPS, whatever, and they lose the item before it gets to the customer.
It depends on the carrier. If it's the U.S. Postal Service, for example, this has happened to me actually several times in the last month, unfortunately. Luckily, it was not as expensive of items. But I will buy the label. I take it to the post office. They scan it, saying they've received it. And their tracking is available for both buyer and seller to look at, to mm-hmm. track. A day, two, three, four, or five go by, and I'm not looking at it personally. I've got so much other stuff to do. Right. Once I've sent it out the door and I'm not looking at it, I'm not paying attention to it. I just sort of expect the buyer is going to be looking at that. They contact me after a week and they say, hey, this has been stuck in Kansas City for the last 4 days. It should have arrived already. Do you know what's going on? And I look at the tracking. Sure enough, it shows that it's been scanned in. It got to one destination, and it probably had two more warehouses to go to before it got to them, but it's somehow not there. It's not been re-scanned in once it got someplace. Sometimes that's because the worker just forgot, or there was an error. They forgot to scan it when they received it, and they moved it on. Sometimes it still gets there. Sometimes it just gets sort of lost. I mean, especially if it's a small item. I sell postcards and things mm-hmm. and tiny little small cardboard things. This can get just sort of like, they forget them in the bottom of a bin or something, or they get rerouted. Most of the time in that case, I just end up just refunding their money. And I'm just out, as the seller, I'm just out that money. I say, I apologize. I'm sorry. You can see that I sent it to you. They're usually not upset. I mean, they're disappointed they didn't get the item, but they're not mad at me.
But you don't get the money back from the shipping?
Oh, certainly not. Oh. No, I don't. Now, there is a certain link and a process that you can go through on the U.S. Postal site service where it's like, find a missing package. And you go in there, you put in the tracking number, you put in when it went, they'll do some, I don't know what they do, some sort of magic behind the scenes where they do like a secondary search for this and they try to find it. I've never really chased that down. That's a lot of phone calls. That's like that's filling out a long form. You got to wait days. You got to do all this stuff. And if it's if I sold something for $6, like I'm like, you know what? I'm just, that's a loss. That's just a part of the business.
Does it just go to the land of misfit toys?
I have no idea where it goes. Sometimes it still ends up there.
We need to get somebody off from the U.S. Postal Service to talk about where this stuff goes.
So, right? Sometimes it ends up there, and they tell me later, like, hey, it did get here. Thank you. Sorry. Can I reissue the money? And I'm usually like, no, but it was just a enjoy
right.
kind of a thing. Sometimes it gets returned to me eventually. And if it does, if I feel like it, I'll send a message back to the buyer and say, hey, it came back to me. Sorry. Like, do you want me to resend this? And we work something out. Mm. But that's how it is. It's, you can go down those rabbit holes. A lot of times for cheap items, it's not worth my time.
Got it.
Honestly. But if it's a big item, you better believe I'm like, if this is, you know, a 20-pound thing, or if it's like a $4,000 instrument, I'm like, where did you lose my right. 1955 Martin acoustic guitar? And that's not going to fly. I'm going to need some money back. But if you show that you have the receipt and you have the tracking, and the good thing about buying my labels through eBay is I don't even necessarily need it. I don't need a receipt from, like, the receipt's sort of naturally there. Like, you can go into the system and you see the tracking number. It shows that I've purchased the label. And if they scan it in at the drop-off spot, that's all I need. Like, I did my part. So they'll honor that.
Got it.
Okay, shall we do a quick game? This game is called This or That.
Oh.
It started on the Rusty the Reseller YouTube channel, which is still very active. Dropped a video yesterday, all on jewelry. So if you like jewelry, You can check that out. Okay, these are the items. The very first item is this very small. I'm going to hold it up here, and there will be pictures available for you guys on our Facebook page. It is a tiny little charm. Ooh. That is in this. I'm going to put it with the black backdrop of my shirt there. It's this little heart-shaped pendant, mm-hmm. or charm. Okay. It's, you can't see it up close, but basically it's a floral design in the shape of a heart. The thing that is unique, I guess, about this is, or maybe what makes it valuable, is that it's made out of 14 karat gold.
Ah.
So it's a solid gold little pendant charm. A heart. It's cute. That's item number one. Item number two is this small stack of Magic the Gathering playing cards.
Oh, boy.
From the game Magic the Gathering, started in like the early 90s.
Yeah.
And the thing that's unique about these, there's probably 50 cards in here, but these are all vintage cards. These are pre-2000 cards. So these are all cards from the 90s. Some of these are really old. I got a couple from the Alpha Edition, which is the very first edition that they made. A couple from Beta. There's Unlimited. There's Revisions. There's, I don't know how many different ones, because they basically put out a new set or a couple of new sets every year. That's one of the, that's way it gets you with this game. If you're going to play it competitively, every whatever, so many months, the three sets ago are no longer legal to play with. You have to be using ones from the last whatever.
Ooh.
So they kind of force you, if you want to play, to continue buying, because you eventually get to where you can't use them.
Yeah. I won't be playing that. That's a racket.
It's a racket. Okay, so Magic the Gathering cards. I'm not going to tell you the individual cards. There's various ones in here, but the point is that they're vintage. So, okay. The game is, which one's more valuable? This little 14-karat gold heart charm, or this stack of 50 pieces of paper with pictures on them and words?
Ooh. Well, I would have to ask some questions, like, if those are...
No questions.
I think it's kidding. The cards. Go ahead. I think it's the cards.
You would be correct. The cards are going to bring me more money. The gold little pendant here, I don't know the exact price. This could sell for as much as $100.
Wow.
It could. But it'll probably sell for more like $50 to $60. And the reason is that it weighs about a little over a gram, 1.2, 1.4 grams. And 14 karat gold per gram is selling in the $42 to $43 a gram right now.
Okay.
So if you think 1.5 grams, you're looking at $60-some.
Got it.
That's just the price of the gold. But if somebody really likes it and it's a functional thing and they want to put it on a bracelet or a necklace, they might pay up. But these cards, because of the age of them and how they're harder and harder to find, like they're older and older, the more and more sets that come out, mm-hmm. the more valuable these get over time, supply and demand. This stack, if I showed the cards and there's a couple that are somewhat valuable in here, which there are, this could easily go for $150, $200, maybe more than that.
Wow.
If you're not aware, listeners, you probably know about Pokemon cards.
Oh, yeah.
You probably know about, but if you don't know about Magic the Gathering, folks, you need to do your research. I looked just this morning before we did this podcast on eBay. I looked up Magic the Gathering card. I looked at highest sold item in the last 90 days. The very highest one, we actually don't know what it sold for because it has a line through the sale price. And what that means on eBay is that somebody asked this price. Either they offered a lower price to the buyer who purchased it at that price, or the buyer offered a lower price to the seller and they accepted it. So we don't know what it actually sold for. But the number one item was a single card from the Alpha set that the asking price was $40,000. It didn't sell for $40,000. We don't know how much. But because we don't know how much, that's kind of a cop-out, right? Did it sell for $2 then?
Mm.
Like, we don't know. But if you scroll down past several other $20,000 purchases that were also marked out, you come to one that was an actual sale, a legitimate sale, that ran on auction. It had 59 bids. It is the Black Lotus card.
Sure.
From the Unlimited edition, sold for $10,600.
Oh, my gosh.
It's one of these. It's this. It's a little piece of paper with a picture on it and words, and it sold for $10,600. And that's not the only one. There are a certain number of cards from the early editions that they refer to as the Power 9. Black Lotus is one of them. Mox Ruby. There's various ones. There's 9 of them. They call them the Power 9 because in the game, you've got several sequences of events that you go back and forth between your opponent, and you're trying to knock down certain power or points until a person goes down to zero. Well, these cards, what they allowed a person to do was deemed pretty quickly as being way too powerful to really use, because it gave whoever had that card too much of an advantage over their opponent. So they very quickly outlawed them from use. And they've been outlawed from use from like actual competitive matches for years and years. But there weren't a lot of them made. When these packs were coming out in the 93, 94, 95, they didn't produce a whole lot of them because nobody knew the game. Like, they were still trying to figure it out. They were trying to build, and it was not a popular game for several years. And then it really picked up. And now those cards are super valuable. There are whole sets of the Power 9 that have been selling at auction for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh my gosh.
For the whole set. So what I want you to know, person out there that has a kid that was playing Magic the Gathering in the early 90s and you've still got all of his cards in a plastic container in your closet, you might have hundreds of thousands of dollars in your closet. Go out there and take a look. And if you do not email me and say, "I'm so sorry, I put these out at the yard sale last week and I put the whole box for $10. Oh man.
Yeah, you can.
That's where your heart sinks.
Well, and it's like any collectibles. You really have to be careful. I think that's the advantage that the reseller has, the secondary market merchant has, is that you are going to have more knowledge than the person that is. It's not to say, hey, if you go to a yard sale and you find this, you're not going to probably tell the person, hey, by the way, do you realize that this is worth X? Because it's not incumbent upon you to do that. I guess you could if they were your friend or something, but if you see that out there, your power is your knowledge. So I think that's an important thing to remember.
Yep. Okay, so that's the game. We do that on the Rusty channel from time to time. It's a fun little thing. It just helps people start to learn to evaluate things. So we're going to go back real briefly to returns, and now I'm going to talk as a seller.
Okay.
So as a seller, the takeaways here are, if you're going to sell something on any platform, you want to do your best ahead of time to describe, photograph that item as best as you possibly can, because you don't want there to be information missed. You don't want the buyer to feel misled. Mm-hmm. You don't want them to think to get something that they think is different than what you were describing, because that will inevitably lead to a return. You want to minimize returns. That's sort of common sense. The process, as we discussed before, is if they get it and they don't like it for some reason, or they think it's damaged, they're going to issue a return. You can set up in your eBay store or your personal selling site what your return policy is, as far as how many days you're going to allow them to return it within. Mm-hmm. But just know that even if you set that, eBay may still allow them to return it, because they run the platform and they can kind of do what they want.
Yeah,
that's been in my experience.
Right.
There have been many times when eBay has a policy about something like a return, and they're not technically, according to their own policies, supposed to allow a return, but they did anyways. And then it's just like I'm talking to a brick wall. Like, I'm not going to get them to change their mind. They did it. They're sticking to it. They don't care if I leave. So I would say do your best to photograph it, make the most accurate title, the most accurate description, take close-up photos. Anything that's discolored, stained, damaged, anything that utilizes components that are replacements, so it doesn't have original parts, anything like that, you want to describe it and photograph the best. If you do that, you're going to minimize returns. You also need to know that if you do it enough, you're going to eventually encounter someone trying to scam you. You'll sell an item, like a really nice pair of tennis shoes. They'll get it and say, it's a little bit more worn than I thought, or there's more wear on the tread than I wanted. They return it to you, and you get a box with like some wrapping paper and like a Christmas ornament in it or something.
Really?
It's not your shoes. Yeah. Or actually what happens is you get a pair of shoes, but they are not the pair of shoes. They've been worn for like 20 years. They look like they're just falling apart.
Yeah.
And so what happens is, from eBay's perspective, they see that shoes were sold, shoes were were returned, and a package of shoes was returned to you. And so they're like, hey, you sold shoes. They sent you shoes back. And you're like, well, it's not the same shoes. Yes, it is the same type of item, but it is not the same exact item. Then you have to, as the seller, take photos of this as best you can, get on and say, see how this does not match the photos in my original listing? Do you see how this is? I sold $200 Nikes, and these are, you couldn't pay me to wear right. these shoes now. Things.
Skechers.
And so, and then you just have to hope that the information you give them, that they're going to say, yeah, because I've had both circumstances. One where they're like, oh yeah, like clearly someone was trying to scam you. We're going to issue you your money back. But you know what? They don't take that money back. Like, you already had to return the buyer's money. They keep that money. It's a buyer protection thing where eBay's going to pay me money too, and they just count that as a loss as a part of their platform. But I don't know.
Wait, so how would they allow the scammers to do that?
With one circumstance, one instance of this, if it's never happened with that buyer before or no one's called them out on it, they might say, well, we don't really know. We're going to side with the buyer, but okay. Like, both people keep their money. We're okay. If this happens multiple times, if I try to scam, like the 10th person I scam, I don't know what the number is, but eventually if I try to scam too many people, eBay is going to wise up and they're going to put restrictions or completely shut down the account that buyer is doing that from. But it's like a numbers game. You really don't know. It depends on which worker is working on that. It depends on if a manager gets involved. It depends on how they sided with each of those cases. But I've also had circumstances where eBay says, well, you know what? I hear what you're saying, and clearly you're not happy, but I can't really tell from the pictures if it is the right item or not. And then they just don't give me my money back. Hmm. So I lost my money and I lost my item. Too bad.
Wow, what a weird, I don't even understand how they can do that.
It is. And listen, I'm not saying you would encounter this, but if you sell for years and you sell thousands of items every year, it's just a number. It's a percentage game. I'm going to encounter that once or twice a year, no matter what. If I'm selling 1,500 items or more, which I do every year, it's going to happen.
Jeez.
So just know that these risks do exist. I'm not saying it would happen to you, but it has happened to me. And I can tell you from personal experience, it's a drag. It's also a time suck because you got to communicate over email. You got to call. Never once. Never twice. Usually 4 to 6 times you have to make phone calls because it doesn't happen like the way they say and whatever. And listen, I still use eBay. It's my primary mode of selling. So I feel like I can air these grievances because out of the other side of my mouth, I'm going to say, thank you, eBay, for having this platform available to me so that I can make my living. But you need to know that these risks are there. So returns happen. The only other thing I'll mention, because we're getting close on time, is know that whatever either your return policy time period is, whether it's a week, 14 days, 30 days, just know that if you sell an item, a big item, you sold it for $1,000, you just got $1,000 minus a 13.5% fee that eBay takes. Mm-hmm. But you get this money. You're like, this is my money. Don't go shopping. Because for me, if I get $1,000 in 29 days or the 30th day, at the last day of my return policy, somebody can come back and say, you know what? I just kind of don't like it.
Really?
Let's send it back. Then they have another 2 to 3 weeks to return that item to me. So we were 30 days. Now it's another 14, 15 days for them to send it back to me. I get it. And then, like, I have to send that money back is the point. And for another 30 days, I actually don't have to send the money back for until I get the item back. But that could be going on 60 days from the sale. So I can't, like, that's kind of my money. It's in purgatory. This money is just sort of floating. And it doesn't belong to them yet. Maybe ever, and it doesn't belong to me, but I got it. So you just have to know everything that I do is 45 to 60 days in the future. All the money I make today, I don't get to spend that for 2 months. The money I'm spending today on my bills is from 2 months ago because I know finally that I can use it. So you just have to be careful. Don't get ahead of yourself and go spend all that money and then have all these returns. I think on an episode, maybe 4 or 5 episodes ago, I had a week where I did $9,000 in sales, 1 week. Boom, that's pretty great. It would have been greater if it had been 100 items that totaled $9,000, but it was 5. Guess how many of those 5 were returned to me? 3. So that $9,000 day, week turned into like a $2,500 week. So that money goes back. That's $5,500 or whatever I have to send back. So just be aware of that. If you sell, people can return things. And when they do that, you have to send them their money back.
That is frightening to think about, but it's also part of the calculation that you got to run. It's that you really need to think about if you're going to start this. It's why starting small is not a bad thing. selling. You like to sell small items because they're easier to eat if something bad happens. So, wow. Again, my head is spinning with all the things that I need to know in order to do this well. But having the information is better than not having the information.
Of course.
So anything else you want to add, Matt, before we head on out of here?
No, I mean, I'm going to go hit the track and get some exercise. Nice. Don't just sit in front of your computer all day.
Interval training. If you're wearing that, you got to do interval training. All right. Well, listen, thank you for listening, folks out there. Remember to like, follow, subscribe. If you get a chance, write us a review, do whatever. We really appreciate you guys being here. And we'll be back with a new show very soon.
Thanks.